Meeting will come to order. We have the minutes of February 26th. Representative Ward, if you would move the minutes of February 26th. Any, any additions, corrections? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, those minutes are approved. And we have a request. I think Mr. Erickson has to go on to something else this morning, so we're putting him right up there. And we have Mr. Erickson, are you also joined by several people from the City of Marshall for your presentation?
Yes, we're privileged to have the City Manager and Mayor. I'll have them introduce themselves.
And there would be, if there are two other people, they can just pull another chair up there. We have Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission here for our presentation.
Okay. A little traffic on 35 down this morning. So. Well, first of all, thank you very much, Madam Chair, for the privilege of presenting before the House Capital Investment Committee. We're privileged today to have our number one agency priority represented here with our representatives from Marshall. I do want to point out that we have a board member, John Evans, serves on the board of the Amateur Sports Commission. And Ben, I'll let you introduce.
Hi, Ben Martig, City Administrator. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, I'm Bob Burns. I'm Mayor of the City of Marshall.
Welcome to the committee.
Okay.
Mr. Erickson.
All of you should have a sheet in front of you with the five priorities of the Amateur Sports Commission. I'm going to do a quick overview of all five, and then I'd like to, we've got a handout for the Marshall Project.
And Mr. Erickson, we understand those are, in fact, in priority order.
That is correct.
That's
okay. And then also, I just want to point out for members of the committee who might be new, there is a book that is the complete history of Amateur Sports Commission projects. I do want to mention, Madam Chair, this was not printed at state expense. We raised private dollars because we don't have the budget to do these four-color publications anymore. But that would give people a reference of the work of the Amateur Sports Commission over the last decade. So with that, our number one priority is the Southwest Minnesota Regional Sports Center. If you notice this report book here, you'll see a number of projects around the state, but we've never established a project in Southwest Minnesota. And that was one of the considerations that the board looked at very highly, and as that we don't want to be the Metropolitan Amateur Sports Commission. We want to be the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission. We want to have representation in all parts of the state. We have a fantastic program in Marshall, in Rochester, in South East Minnesota, and we have Blaine and other projects, but nothing in Southwest. So we're going to hear a little bit more of that shortly. The second priority has to do with the National Sports Center in Blaine, which is the flagship facility for the Amateur Sports Commission. That facility has 4 million visitors a year and produces over $40 million of economic impact. We just did a major study on should we develop a baseball facility, build 25 baseball facilities, or should we simply expand the field complex so that we can do larger and more soccer, rugby, and lacrosse. The study concluded that the most cost-effective return on investment for Minnesota would be for the fields. Baseball fields are much more expensive to construct, and they simply didn't have the same economic impact as our traditional field sports. As you know, we operate the largest youth soccer tournament in the nation with 17,000 kids, and that event can go larger now if we develop these fields. So there's $3.2 million for our second priority. Our third priority is a regional sports center in St. Paul. It's very difficult and challenging to develop urban sports facilities because of the scarcity of land to build anything, economies of scale. So this $100,000 is planning dollars to look at prime site and some other sites to see if we could develop a quality St. Paul facility. The next project is a regional project in Moorhead. We don't currently have a Northwest Minnesota project. However, this project is lower on our priority, and I think with the tremendous expectation for flood money, in northwest Minnesota. We feel that this priority should be looked at in later years. And then finally, there is a CAPRA request or asset preservation for the National Sports Center in Blaine, having to do with HVAC equipment and some safety code requirements that are dealing with some buildings that are 20 years old. So with that, you should have a handout in your packet, and I'd like to have the mayor walk us through this. In fact, let me start off.
We don't yet have the bill in our possession, but there's a bill. I think Representative Swinsky is the author. It's somewhere in the process. It's not here, but technically this is our hearing about this idea. The bills are being heard other places, and so these are informational.
Yep.
And I'm assuming, Mr. Erickson, because we have so many new people on this committee, when you have presented in the past, you have made a pretty compelling evidence, lest anyone think this is a frill in the bonding bill and isn't part of the economic impact. I'm assuming that you'll be speaking a bit today about pages, it looks like 8 and 9, in this book. You tell a pretty compelling story about the economic impact of these centers.
Absolutely, Madam Chair. That was going to be my dramatic close.
Okay.
So wait for that.
I blew that.
As a prelude to the Marshall presentation.
Carlson, did you have
I was just, when I look at the statewide master plan and the references to the regional commissions, if you could just quickly comment on what that governance structure is relative to the Minnesota Commission, and then on the first map it says the others are identified as regional. So I think there are some ties there, and I'm not sure exactly what that governance is.
Mr. Erickson.
Okay. Representative Carlson, Madam Chair, the first page in your Marshall presentation addresses directly what Representative Carlson is looking at. Our board has taken a concerted effort to identify these regional sites. I think that one of the things that's challenging for us, every town and community in Minnesota would love to have state dollars to expand their amateur sports facilities, but only a relatively few can play a role, and they need to be at centers that have hotel and restaurant infrastructure. So our board has taken the time to evaluate and declare that these sites are the ones that we believe are worthy of further state investment. And so lest the legislature be bombarded with requests, you know, from 100 different communities every year, we really want to focus here, because a community like Rochester has the 4,000 plus hotel rooms. Marshall has the state university and enough hotel rooms to be in this business. It doesn't make any sense for us to build a large facility in an area that doesn't have the hospitality infrastructure. And so our board has worked with these key communities, Representative Carlson, and help them establish regional amateur sports commissions. And so, I was going to say that Marshall is really a model community. They brought together a task force with business leaders, college leaders, school district leaders, and sports leaders to put together a group which is the nucleus of their sports commission, very much like Rochester Amateur Sports Commission has done. And they've done all the heavy lifting. The other thing that I want to point out, many communities come to you and say, give us X million dollars in bonding, and then we'll use that as leverage to raise local money. This community has done it the right way. They have passed a local referendum this last fall. They've identified, of this $12 million project, their $8 million of it, and they have the sources. So they're coming to you having done all of their homework. And in my 20-plus years experience, I think this is the community that has really been the model of how it should be done. And so with that light introduction, Mr. Mayor, I'll have you guys continue, and if you could explain to the committee the dimensions of this project.
Mr. Burns, please identify yourself for the record.
Yes, my name is Bob Burns. I'm a mayor of the city of Marshall, and I am also a board member of the Southwest Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission, the commission that Mr. Erickson had referred to. You do, if I could go forward then with the presentation, Madam Chairman, I'll also work in tandem with Mr. Martik, our city administrator for the city of Marshall. As a bit of introduction, the you all do have this handout, and as with the map in the city of Marshall, we really look at this as an economic development effort for Southwest Minnesota, in that the location, the previous study that's done shows that there's a market from South Dakota, Nebraska, Iowa for amateur sports that would be coming to Southwest Minnesota, and that's why the location of Marshall is key. You want to add anything to that?
The second map, Madam Chair, Ben Martig.
Mr. Martig, please identify yourself.
Sorry,
for the record.
Ben Martig, City Administrator for the City of Marshall. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. There is a follow-up map that kind of shows that region going out, probably about a two-hour drive time out is what we're looking at. Sioux Falls, South Dakota is a continuing growing regional center, and we have a direct connection off of Highway 23, which is a MnDOT regional corridor designation. And so we know that there's sporting facilities growing there, but they have a definite interest and with our facilities as well. One of the things maybe just to comment on is that we do have a vision for our projects that it would be something of significance, it would be a draw, and the and I think the bonding that we have is really critically necessary in order to get that done. Now, we have voter authorization to proceed. Our project would really be significantly hampered if we weren't able to get state funding, but we've been working for a long time on this, and really we are building our design and construction team currently and putting that in place so that we can get building right away. So we are shovel ready to get going with the state funding.
Mr. Burns.
The project timeline, I'll briefly highlight a couple key things. In 2007,
And are we now on page 5?
We are, yes, Madam Chairman. In 2007 was when Marshall was designated by the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission as the 7th and the final regional center. That was really the time that that our local community really got in gear and started working towards where we are today. The since that time, we have worked both legislatively and also done our homework at the local level. And last November, the local option sales tax was presented to the voters, and there was two questions that were presented to the voters. One was a half-cent sales tax, and the other was a food and beverage tax that would support the operating cost of this facility for the next 30 years. The both of those questions passed overwhelmingly, so we have strong local support. In addition to that, leading up to that, we did do the preliminary planning, and as was mentioned earlier, this has broad support and is a public-private partnership. When we identified the location and the property where this will be built, it was donated by the Schwann Food Company for this effort.
Representative Detmer has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the flagship facility, I was able to coach several sports at that event during my coaching years in high school. Now, the Marshall facility, how would that compare to the flagship in terms of facilities and so forth?
Mr. Erickson.
Representative Detmer, Madam Chair, we've referred to Marshall as a mini Blaine. Instead of, you know, like 55 soccer fields, they'd have, you know, 10 fields. Instead of 8 ice rinks, they'd have 2. And then because they have all this infrastructure at the state university and at the high school, all contiguous, it acts like a, you know, 400-acre athletic campus. And so they do a great job already in volleyball and basketball tournaments. This will only add to that legacy in the ice sports and field sports, soccer, lacrosse, and rugby. So I refer to it as if you've been to Blaine, someday it'll be a mini national sports center in southwest Minnesota.
Okay, thank you.
Please continue.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Burns.
On page 6, that maybe will help describe this the plan a bit. That's a drawing of both what is there and what is being planned. So the the proposed multi-use sports facility, second from the bottom on the drawing. That is the 80,000 square foot facility that would be two sheets of ice. There also then would be the proposed performance softball and youth baseball fields that would be constructed. Existing would be the soccer fields that would be upgraded, and then existing would be the upgraded ball fields that are currently there. And then the Marshall High School, which is a relatively new facility, about a five-year-old facility, that is there. That's where the basketball and volleyball and that type of thing. And then across the highway, Highway 23, in cooperation with the Minnesota Department of Transportation, we have funded a pedestrian underpass under the four-lane highway. So there's safe access to the university side where there is currently being upgraded the track and field facility. There's performance soccer facilities, performance baseball facilities, and, of course, football is on that side. So really this whole complex really works nicely together. Mr. Martig.
Mr. Martig.
Thank you. Ben Martig, City Administrator. Again, Madam Chair, members of the committee. The other areas I would like to comment on is that this is about also spurring private economic development in the area. So you can see the darker shaded green, which doesn't have any area, kind of around the Minnesota Pond, if you see that down in the corner. That's all owned, the darker portions owned by the Schwan Food Company, most of it. They did sell a piece of it off, but we are recruiting a hotel complex that would have the Civic Center, our meeting convention space that would be hopefully connected to our facility, and also looking to attract other retail and entertainment related businesses, restaurants, those kinds of things that would be also important to the people that would be coming to use these facilities as an added draw. And there has been significant interest. There is growth potential on the other side of our facilities to the east as well as to the north as well. So we are looking at it spurring additional development to really kind of make this a full entertainment experience for people that come to our community.
Madam Chair,
Mr. Burns.
I will just add one other item. The you can see the retention ponds that are being that are depicted in the blue, and at the corner the pond that is in the shape of Minnesota is actually the shape of the pond. So so we really felt as long as we're digging a hole, it might be may as well look like something. So the
there must be some sort of prize for that. Mr. Erickson?
Okay. The one thing that you alluded to, Madam Chair, is the economic development aspect of this. I have found that over the last, decade, when people first think of amateur sports, they think of it only as recreation. I remember Representative Norton, when I was asked to come down to Rochester almost 20 years ago, and they had me speak at a noon meeting of the Chamber of Commerce, and there must have been 250 people in the room, and give them the theme of using amateur sports as an economic development tool. The city of Rochester, had, I don't know, it's 4,000 or 5,000 hotel rooms that were full Monday through Thursday through surgeries and empty on the weekends. They created a formal amateur sports commission funded in partnership with their Convention Visitors Bureau. And now I think they have the State Amateur Sports Commission has three staff. I think in Rochester they have six full-time staff that are bringing events weekend after weekend, filling those hotel rooms. And I found that always at first glance people think this is only recreation, but when you build a facility with some economies of scale, which we have in Blaine, we have in Rochester, and we are proposing in Marshall, you will draw people from the surrounding states who will come and spend hours in Minnesota. That's why it's becoming a proven economic development tool, and then that's my lead-in to these charts. Prior to the creation of the Amateur Sports Commission, Minnesota received less than $10 million a year in out-of-state visitors through amateur sports. Once the state made investment in the world's largest soccer complex in Blaine, or the beautiful pool at the university, or the speed skating, then we started getting these national events. And like I said earlier, like in soccer, we host an event every year that has 17,000 kids in it, half of which come from outside Minnesota, and then their parents. And I think we're the largest single tourism event that occurs in Minnesota every year. And it's not a convention. It's not, like a traditional activity. It's amateur sports.
And so, I think some of them from out of the country.
Oh, yeah. We have, I think we had I think 16 or 18 countries represented, in referees. We had like almost 80 referees from England alone in the tournament, let alone the teams. Anyway, so if you look at these charts, you'll see how it started back in prior to 1990, very low. But as these facilities have come online, we're averaging $70 million a year. And I also want to mention to people, we don't count a dollar of somebody who drives from St. Cloud to Blaine. We only count the dollars from someone who's outside Minnesota. And since our events, people have to register. We know if there's an Iowa team or a Norway team or a South Dakota team. So it isn't guesswork. These are definitive numbers. So it's a little niche industry as part of tourism that is maintained every year. So we've been blessed with such wonderful support of the capital investment committees of both the House and Senate over the years that people understand if you invest in these facilities, it's a good. And Minnesota gets good return on investment. In fact, we can demonstrate at more length that the capital dollars the state has invested in this activity, the state has received more in sales tax from out-of-state visitors than you have invested in this. And then you get all the additional spinoffs as well. So, Madam Chair, that concludes the reason why you should continue your wonderful investment in amateur sports, especially with our number one project in Marshall, so that Southwest Minnesota can be part of the franchise. And then I want to conclude with, we have one other very important thing that's the legislative initiative that relates to the Amateur Sports Commission. There are two bills that have passed state government finance in the House and have been referred to capital investment. They may not have arrived yet, but they both relate to Mighty Ducks. So with your permission, Madam Chair, should I give you the background on those?
And we do have some handouts, members, in your packet about those. Are you talking about one is to improve air quality?
Right. There should be House File 112 and then House File 868.
So we don't have those bills before us, but they're heard elsewhere.
I'll be very brief, but I think I can net it out very easily for you. In the last 2 years, there's been a half a dozen incidents where people have gone to the hospital from air quality problems in Minnesota ice arenas. A couple occurred during construction, and there was some air ventilation equipment that was turned off. Basically, it's very simple. In all the sports played in Minnesota, in swimming pools, basketball courts, volleyball courts, nobody drives a machine in the center of that building and circles 20 times, putting exhaust fumes into that arena. But in ice arenas, it occurs every hour on the hour throughout the year. Now, in most cases, the air handling equipment, circles that air out so that it's safe for the participants. We have a number of aging arenas where that isn't the case, and sometimes just mistakes are made. Now, because of the problems we've had in injuries, the Minnesota Department of Health established new rules and guidelines, which makes it near impossible for our 200 ice arenas to operate with propane-powered machines. Of those 200 ice arenas in Minnesota, representing close to 270 different ice sheets, only one-third have electric Zambonis, which pretty much solve the problem. The others still have propane. And so they either have to have state-of-the-art monitoring and HVAC equipment, or they need to switch out. House File 112 provides $1.5 million for grants of up to $200,000 that communities could apply for under the same kind of tradition of Mighty Ducks, so that if the South St. Paul ice arena wanted to switch from a propane Zamboni, which costs $70,000 to $80,000, to electric, which costs closer to $100,000, they could apply and get $20,000-$30,000 to help defray those costs. Or if they wanted to upgrade their HVAC equipment, the same thing.
We do have a couple of questions to this issue.
Okay.
Representative Moline?
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry, Madam Chair, it wasn't to this issue specifically. I just had a question. There was talk in my community about doing a Miracle League, which is for people that are in wheelchairs or have disabilities so that they're able to participate in sports. And I'm just wondering if you've ever given grants to projects like that or have been involved in the Miracle League at all.
Mr. Erickson.
Madam Chair and Representative, we have not had a grant program that has specifically addressed sports for disabled populations. I think people have used some of our grants traditionally when we had Mighty Kicks and Mighty Kids grants. Some communities, I think Rochester actually built a miracle field using in part grants, monies from one of our grants. But our agency has really been focusing on economic development activities, so we go out and try to build facilities of a scale that draw out-of-state visitors, and we don't directly address facilities that address disabled sports populations.
And so are you saying the Rochester one was at their own initiative?
Is it? Madam Chair, primarily own expense, but we did have a grant program like 10 years ago called Mighty Kicks, which was for the building of fields, both soccer and baseball, and some communities did use those funds in part for miracle-type fields.
Well, yeah, Madam Chair, I guess I would just encourage you to look into possibly setting something like that up. I mean, I know it wouldn't necessarily be money-making or economic development, but I think that the value to the community and making sure that all people sort of have access to engage in sports is really important. So I would just encourage you to look into that a little bit more.
Good suggestion.
Yeah,
we probably pressure you so much on the economic side that we have to sometimes push back on the other side, too, and say sometimes it's there are other human values.
That's fair.
Representative Erdahl has a question also.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Erickson or the other testifiers, just wondering, the solution is electric Zambonis or replace the air handling system. Could you give me any comparison in cost for the average replacement of an air handling system, what that would cost and what it would cost for a Zamboni electric?
Mr. Erickson.
Representative Erdahl, Madam Chairman, I'm not verse in the exact replacement costs of air handling equipment because our arenas vary in age and dimension so much, but my guess would be that I know that electric Zamboni is in the $90,000 to $100,000 range, and I think HVAC systems of arenas are probably in the $300,000 to $400,000 range to completely replace the system. Now, it gets complicated because somebody might have a system that needs partial retrofitting, and so it's a $50,000 fix to a $400,000 HVAC system. So that's where it gets a little bit more, confusing.
So, Madam Chair.
Lots of questions to this. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Erickson, I just remember this being in the news and people getting sick from this that was in the news, and now we're reacting to that with mechanical upgrades and Zamboni switchouts. Do we change the building codes? Do we change anything that says that we have to do this, or is this just a reaction by local communities?
Mr. Erickson.
Madam Chair, there is a change in code. The Minnesota Department of Health changed the standard of air quality, and instead of 5 parts per million, it's now they only allow 2 parts per million of these different toxic things. So basically, in the last 3 months, that change has forced Minnesota cities and counties that own these arenas to take action to lower those emissions. And the only two ways to do it is to switch out their Zambonis or to improve their air handling equipment.
Thank you, Mr. Erickson. And Representative Hausman. After we went through the Crookston hockey arena, the Zamboni was the least of their problems for their air quality. I don't know, up there.
There are other forms of toxicity, aren't there?
That was really bad.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Erickson, I want to refer you to page 8 in the glossy handout that was provided to each one of us about the economic impact engine. And it would appear to me that there's a symbiotic relationship between economic impact and facilities attendance. And I'll draw your attention to the years between 97 and 2000, where we see an incredible rise not only in attendance but economic impact My first question is if you could respond to what your assessment is, the reason for that.
Mr. Erickson.
Yeah, Representative Albert, Madam Chair, that is simply there was a number of new facilities that came online that year. So we started receiving legislative appropriations in 1987 and consistently, and I could look back and see which facility, but whenever we saw those big jumps, it was when a new facility like National Volleyball Center in Rochester came online, so all of a sudden 300,000-400,000 more visitors are recorded in our statewide attendance.
I'm sure.
Follow up.
Then, Mr. Erickson, then would it be fair to say then that we, in the out years here between 2010 and 2012, I'm seeing what would be perceived by many as a decline in the economic impact as well as kind of a static line for the attendance. Is it your understanding that we are at capacity with existing, and that's the assertion by the new facilities in Marshall?
Mr. Erickson.
Representative Albrecht, Madam Chair. Our assessment of that is the recession. We believe that amateur sports activities are largely recession-proof, but they're not recession. I mean, they're recession-resistant, but they're not recession-proof. Imagine if you looked at the housing sales during the same period. It would look like Mount Everest going up and down. But we believe that during the last 4 or 5 years, you know, a lot of people lost their jobs. People were making less money, but people still generally maintained their daughter, their son, in figure skating and hockey and wrestling and so on. So we felt pretty good that the numbers were relatively flat during the last 4 or 5 years rather than a steep decline. And so I don't think it's quite an issue that we're at capacity. I just think that we've had 4 or 5 tougher years where we saw some declines in our attendance, but modest.
Just one.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What demographic age group does this organization serve as a majority?
Mr. Erickson.
President Albright, Madam Chair, we serve primarily boys and girls like 7 to 19 years old, school age population, though we do have some adult programs, and their families. If you look at as the Schwann's USA Cup soccer tournament in Blaine with the 17,000, that's an event that has kids ages, I think, 7 to 19, and then you add their parents and grandparents, and that's the primary population we serve.
Mr. Erickson, would it be fair to say that the birth rate in the state of Minnesota or in the upper Midwest is declining?
Mr. Erickson.
Representative Auburn and Madam Chair, I'm not a student of like Minnesota demographics to that extent that I can speak intelligently to that, but I understand they are declining a little bit.
I'm not for the questions.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Erickson. Madam Chair, Mr. Erickson, I won't take a lot of time, but I just wanted to also support Representative Moline's comments on the Miracle Fields. And you know, I was a high school teacher and coach, and I actually started the what's called the adapted floor hockey team in Brainerd, Minnesota. We're the only adapted team north of the cities for adapted athletics. And Minnesota is one of the leading adapted athletic programs in the nation. And there's been a national dialogue now beginning about allowing our handicapped children to be able to participate in athletics, be it community, a school, or whatever athletics. And being that we are, Minnesota is leading the nation, Minnesota has long also understood the economic impact of that, too. If you've ever gone to an adapted soccer, floor hockey, softball game, you will see that they are packed, that they bring in revenue. And the Miracle Fields, as Representative Moline stated, and Representative Norton probably can testify to as well, will drive economic growth in the areas. So I would encourage you also to, in Brainerd right now, there is a Miracle Field development underway and fundraising program underway to put one in Brainerd. So I just, again, I want to support what Representative Moline said from an economic standpoint, but also from a standpoint of spreading out athletics and participation in all kind of events for disabled folks. Thank
Sounds
you.
Like good advice.
Duly noted.
Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And going back to the air quality, I know
do we have a state agency that goes around and checks all of the, or is each individual facility have their own checking mechanism?
Mr. Erickson.
Representative Detmer, Madam Chair, the Minnesota Department of Health on a regular basis visits every Minnesota indoor ice arena and tests the air quality on a surprise inspection basis. And with these new standards, like it's going to be very difficult, I said, for these people to reach them.
Yeah. And it just maybe to piggyback on Representative Ward, I know we have a Special Olympics in Minnesota too, and there's also there's a national world Special yeah. Olympics that maybe we could tap into that that type of economic development, bringing that into Minnesota. And we have Olympic training centers for our Olympic teams too, in certain sports too.
Absolutely.
Representative Swidzinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just kind of want to speak a little bit to just Representative Albright kind of talked a little bit about the downturn, and the presenter talked a little bit about how these are a little bit insulated when it comes to recession. You know, if you look at certain areas of our state when it comes to unemployment, and during the same period of time, when you look at areas that were dependent on people traveling and going visit and tourism, they've probably seen probably some of the biggest hits when it comes to people making conscious financial decisions against recreation. But when it comes to sports and sporting type facilities, when children are involved and their kids are involved, it becomes an expansion, and it becomes, you know, when times are tight, it becomes the vacation and kind of a dual purpose thing. And I think one of the unique things about the Marshall Project is if you think about regional centers, people don't realize that sometimes regional centers aren't even in our state. You know, if you're from Lacaparle County or Yellow Madison County or Big Stone County, you know, it might be a city in South Dakota that's your main shopping center. Well, Marshall can represent that for some parts of northern Iowa and parts of South Dakota, and this, the natural modes of travel don't necessarily get dictated by state lines. And so I think that's why this project's uniquely beneficial to the state. So, thanks.
Representative Carlson, and then I think we'll have to have you conclude.
Madam Chair, I was just going to do a follow-up to the comments by Representative Ward and Moline. Some of you may or may not know, and maybe the mayor could comment, but being that the project before us is in Marshall, and part of that cooperative program is Southwest State University, it's the newest state university we have, and it was built from the get-go to be handicapped access. And I assume all of the additional facilities, because the laws have changed in recent years, are handicapped access as well. But Southwest State University in that respect was a very unique university in terms of providing those kinds of services, and I assume this tie-in here now would enhance the concerns that were raised by Representative Moline and Ward.
Mr. Burns?
Madam Chairman and Representative, thank you for bringing up that point. And in fact, the Southwest Minnesota State University, which is a partner organization with us on this project, certainly is designed to be adaptable to individuals with physical challenges. And I'd also note that they have a very successful adaptive sports program. In fact, the wheelchair basketball team is headed to the Nationals as we speak. So thank you for bringing up that point.
They were, Madam Chair, drawing college students that had those special needs literally from all over the state through the years. And it's a very, very unique university in that regard.
And then we'll ask you to conclude, our committee administrator just reminded me we did also have a member of the public who had asked to speak today, so I almost forgot about that. So we'll ask you to conclude your presentation, and then we'll...
Okay, in order to be as succinct as possible, the second Mighty Ducks bill, just as Representative Dean said, that was concerned about the standard change, so that causes arenas having to react with air quality. The same thing happened with the Freon R22 issue. The federal government, after the Protocol of Montreal, has banned R22 Freon. Two-thirds of Minnesota's ice arenas operate with that substance. So in the next 10 years, all of these facilities are going to have to convert. The convert can range for as little as $100,000 and as much as $1 million, depending on the system. Some old Freon systems have Freon going throughout the whole rink under the ice. Some just have it in a small area where there's a chiller and there's a less toxic substance that goes under the ice. So just very briefly then, there's the second Mighty Ducks 868, also authored by Representative Hansen, that also passed state government finance, which will be coming to you. And so if you think of those two things, issues are, there are two environmental issues, one caused by a change in Minnesota Health Department standards, another caused by the change in federal environmental standards.
We'll take the public testimony, and then if you'd like some concluding remark after that.
Okay, great.
It's Mary O'Connor. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. I'm Mary O'Connor from Brooklyn Center. Madam Chair and members, these are my beliefs. Amateur sports can be handled by professional sports and nonprofits. Government should not be involved in amateur sports. Government should not borrow any more money. It has to be paid back by the taxpayers. Businesses and nonprofits should not get government money. Mayo Hospital does not need government money. Also, get rid of Job Z, angel credits, tax increment financing, and any other corporate welfare. Don't borrow any money for new government buildings either. We have too many government buildings now. Sell some of our government buildings and use that money to repair the ones we need. Don't give any money to Rochester, Marshall, Moorhead, Blaine, St. Paul, St. Cloud, Duluth, or any other city, or the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission. Let professional sports and nonprofits handle amateur sports. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. Any concluding remarks, Mr. Erickson, before we... we should give the bill's author the last word, maybe. Mr. Representative Swedzinski, any concluding remarks?
Yes, I just want to thank the committee for allowing amateur sports and the City of Marshall to present their project. The city has a long history of just being involved and getting active. You know, we got a YMCA that has probably the highest participation rates in the state. The City of Marshall passed their sales tax increase on themselves by a high margin. They're interested in this project. They like this project and appreciate your time. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
And Madam Chair, I'd like to thank you for your continued support, and we'll continue to do our best to expand the benefits of amateur sports and economic development and create opportunities for our kids and families. Thank you.
And then we have the Minnesota Zoo today. Mr. Empke, are you joined by anyone else?
No.
And members, you do have a packet. Looks like this. Okay, she's here. And we'd like to ask Representative Wills to join us at the table. We usually invite the local legislator to join us at the table when we have the issue before us. So welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Lee Emke, Director and CEO of the Minnesota Zoo, and thank you for the opportunity to present an overview of the zoo's programs with a focus, obviously, on our capital investment program and needs.
And members, he substituted for us. We had a bit of an agenda change today, and you can feel by this. This is hot off the press, literally hot off the press. And we thank you so much for your willingness to do a quick response to us.
My pleasure, Madam Chair. The Minnesota Zoo, as you all probably know, is a state agency with a very unusual and singular mission, which is to connect people, animals, and the natural world. And the mission exists in order to develop a number of outcomes. And one of those outcomes is the actual conservation of wildlife around the world. Our programs extend well beyond Minnesota. This is a photo of an African black rhino. And those of you who have been following the news about what's been happening with this species realize it's one of the most threatened animals on Earth. Well, the Minnesota Zoo is currently involved in a partnership with the Nature Conservancy and the Save the Rhino Trust in Namibia, southwestern Africa, that's the only successful rhino conservation program in the wild today, because we're working with communities there to create ecotourism economic benefits that outweigh the potential benefits of poaching of these animals, which is destroying them throughout the rest of their range. And it really represents the kind of work that the Minnesota Zoo has been doing for many years since we opened back in 1978. Using non-state resources, all the funding for this program comes from our supporters from the Minnesota Zoo Foundation, but it really does represent the mission of our zoo, which is not just to present animals to the public, but also to actually help save them in nature. That principle is being applied pretty extensively right now here in Minnesota, using legacy funding received from the legislature a couple of years ago. We've been able to greatly expand our Minnesota-based conservation programs. We have conservation biologists and veterinarians who are working with the DNR and the university on the issue of the disappearance of the moose here in our state. We have programs aimed at reintroducing bison to some of the state parks. We're looking at prairie restoration and some of the endangered butterfly species that are found there. And all of those are connected to conservation education programs at our zoo. And that really does get to the second leg of our mission. In addition to direct conservation, we do a lot of environmental education. And in fact, in terms of the numbers of programs that we have, the numbers of students and visitors that we serve, we are the largest environmental education center in the state of Minnesota. That happens on zoo grounds with courses in our education programs, but more and more it's also happening remotely through distance learning programs that are allowing us to electronically connect with schools around the state. We also have a Zoomobile program, which brings zoo animals and zoo educators to just about every county in the state on a two-year cycle. We are a statewide entity. Obviously, we're drawing visitors from around Minnesota, but when people aren't able to visit us, we're also finding ways to visit them, either physically with our Zoomobile program or remotely with our distance learning activities.
And they're trying to come to the Capitol, I understand, which they have done every year, but for some reason we've imposed new rules this year that are making it more difficult for you. We're
Madam Chair, normally we're a little more nervous about
people who come visit us. Or
typically, Madam Chair, we like to enliven these meetings a little bit with some of the live animals that we do use in schools and hospitals around the state. Apparently, there was a little-known rule that said that any animals coming into the Capitol needed prior permission from the Commissioner of Administration. We're now working with them to develop a protocol that will allow us to do that, and I'd welcome you all to come to Zoo Day at the Capitol, which will be on the 21st of this month, and we'll take over the rotunda for about an hour and a half, and we expect to have a good selection of our Zoomobile animals at that time. So a little glitch in the system this year, but we'll move ahead with full permission soon. The key to the success of the zoo in recent years has been capital investment and reinvestment through, obviously, state bonding, both for new projects at the zoo and also for asset preservation. We're about to celebrate our 35th birthday this year, so as we've been saying, we're no longer the new zoo, and a lot of our original facilities are in need of repair, upgrade, or replacement, and a lot of that has happened in recent years. We've demonstrated our ability to take existing original 1978 exhibits and with asset preservation money and private money completely renovate them. Our Minnesota Trail is a great example of that. It went from being kind of the forgotten stepchild of the zoo that people didn't even know was there to being one of our most effective and popular exhibits through asset preservation funding back in 2007. Major new exhibits have been developed, again, using a combination of public and private money. Russia's Grizzly Coast, which opened back in 2008, was really a turning point for the zoo. We saw great attendance increases, visitor satisfaction went up, national awards for the design of this exhibit. We now have professionals from zoos all over the world coming to see this facility and wanting to copy it, which is, of course, the sincerest form of flattery. We've dealt with the reality that the original construction of the zoo had some drawbacks. It was built in the 70s when concrete was king, and as an environmental organization, we're trying to portray a different image than what our old entrances used to say to people. This is how people used to enter the zoo. with asset or with capital monies received in 2006 and 2007, we've been able to transform the entrance of the zoo to create a welcoming experience that really sets the tone for the visit, and is also, of course, the last impression as people leave. Environmental education, so critical for our mission. We now have a beautiful new facility, the Cargill Environmental Education Center, that allows us to serve many more students in an environmentally friendly space. All of the construction that we do at the zoo uses the best practices in environmental design. We want to be modeling what others could be doing, not just meeting standards, but exceeding them. So, for example, the new education center has a green roof. We use geothermal energy, recycled materials, and this is a LEED certified facility, as have all of the other new projects at the zoo in recent years. We've also been creative in reusing older facilities that were no longer in use. Our original beluga whale pool that was part of the 1978 building of the zoo had been sitting empty for about 15 years after the beluga whales went elsewhere. And we were able to convert it into a beautiful new indoor theater space, the Target Learning Center, which now features our indoor bird show, but lots of other educational and community activities, and essentially reuse the shell of that pool to create, at a much lower cost than if we had done it from scratch, a new, beautiful new theater that's added value to our programs at the zoo. That also allowed us to free up some other space that originally had a small theater in the zoo, and we converted that into a new penguin exhibit, which is one of the first things you see when you come into the zoo. Our goal was to have exhibits of active social animals immediately upon coming into the zoo to create the excitement and the energy that you want at a facility like ours, and it's been a great success. All of this was part of a public-private fundraising campaign that we concluded this past fall, with the opening of a black bear exhibit on our Minnesota Trail. It was the one major Minnesota animal that we had not exhibited in that area. And using a combination of legacy funds, which were used for planning as well as for some of the interpretive elements at the end, and private money that funding allowed us to raise, we were able to complete the Minnesota Trail and complete what was a $75 million public and private campaign to develop redevelop major portions of the zoo. It's become a really successful public-private partnership. The state funding that's come through the bonding bills over the years has leveraged and generated a lot of interest by many private partners who've invested both in capital projects at the zoo, but also for some of our underwriting some of our education and conservation programs. I can say without any question that money would not have come had the state not invested in its own facility through bonding bills over the years. And it's all resulted in some pretty dramatic outcomes. Attendance, one of the primary things that we look at, and we just heard about how the recession has affected attendance at a lot of institutions and facilities. Well, in the last 4 years, we've seen three of those years have been record years for attendance at our zoo, including the highest attendance ever in our last fiscal year. We know that's a combination of things, but certainly having the new and refreshed exhibits through capital investment has been the primary reason for that growth. We're offering a better guest experience than ever before, and people are responding, voting with their feet and coming to the zoo in record numbers.
But it is interesting to Representative Albright's earlier point, that dip here almost equals what we saw in the amateur sports slide.
That's correct. along with the increases in attendance over the last few years, what that's allowed us to do is increase our earned revenue at the zoo. And you can see historically, back in the 80s, the zoo relied largely on the state for its operating appropriations. Our annual operating budget was primarily derived from the state appropriation back in the 80s. Over time, obviously, our costs have risen, but the percentage and the proportion of where funding comes from has completely reversed from what it was in the early days, and we're now at about 29% of our operating budget coming from state sources. That's 24% from the general fund and about 6% from legacy funding in the last biennium. And the remainder is earned revenue at the zoo or contributed income through the Minnesota Zoo Foundation. And I think it's interesting to point out that We've seen this complete reversal, but if you look across the country at all zoos, whether they're operated by cities, whether they're private nonprofits, whether they're county or state owned, on average they receive about 35% of their operating budget from a public source, whether again, whether city, county, state. And as a state agency, we're now actually receiving a significantly lower number in terms of the, on a percentage basis of state support, yet we're actually thriving. We've had, as you see, wonderful years and expansion of our programs. And we, again, I can attribute that primarily to the capital reinvestment that the zoo has seen over the last 6 to 7 years. Which brings us to the question of what's next. We've completed this big campaign, which really implemented a lot of what we had planned in a 2001 master plan. We've revisited that plan last year, and our boards have adopted a new 15 to 20 year vision for the future of the Minnesota Zoo. We have a fantastic future in that we have a 485 acre site, lots of opportunities for expansion, as well as well, just having a variety of habitats on our site. And the master plan embodies lots of different ideas, lots of different, you know, major new exhibits, but also renovations and improvements of existing facilities. And among them, and I'll just run through some of the highlights, our snow monkey exhibit, which I'll talk a little bit more about later, needs major revitalization. Our northern trail, we want to make it much more thematic and conservation focused with an exhibit called Asian Highlands. We want to utilize the forest and lakes that we have on our site to get people more connected to it and out in it with adventure play activities, again, using the nature that we have at the zoo. And finally, we're looking to develop a major exhibition of African wildlife to connect with our African conservation programs that we've been doing for years and to provide a guest experience that we know is going to drive new attendance and new interest in the zoo and utilize some of the amazing property that we have out in Apple Valley.
I will say, members, when I had first heard about the this little recreational aspect, that was the piece that that I was a little nervous about because, of course, I didn't know if we were creating a Valley Fair kind of thing, but you clarified that, and maybe you could just help the committee understand how you're going to focus that adventure play, not with rides as we normally think of it, but...
Certainly, Madam Chair. Part of our mission is connecting people, in fact, a key part of our mission is connecting people to nature. We know that kids these days are less and less actually active in nature. They're spending a lot more time in front of computer screens and the like. And the opportunity to have high-end kind of physical adventure activities utilizing the forest that we have at the zoo, utilizing physical skills to explore and be in nature, whether it's through zip lines or climbing walls and the like, are something that we know have been popular in other informal science centers and zoos. It's a revenue generator potentially, but we also know it could meet the needs of a demographic that sometimes we lose in the zoo business, which is when you get into the tweens and teens and they're off doing other things. We think this will actually attract that group to spend more time at the zoo and get in touch with nature utilizing you know, physical skills and the like. So it's kind of a win-win in that we know it can drive revenue and attendance and new demographics to the zoo and support our mission of connecting people and nature. In addition to the animal experiences we're thinking about for an African expansion, we're again looking at unique opportunities to generate revenue and to drive attendance and to increase tourism at our zoo. One idea that we're looking at is developing an actual tented camp experience, much like one might find when you go on safari in Africa. Obviously, it would be a seasonal opportunity here in Minnesota, but we think in the middle of summer, what could be more amazing than waking up in the morning, having a cup of coffee, and looking out over a savanna with giraffes and rhinos grazing down below. So again, the opportunity to do truly unique things at our zoo are all embodied in this master plan. Which brings us, obviously, to our capital budget needs going forward. And basically, ignore all the stuff I just showed you in the you know, the big dreams of the major new projects at the zoo. What we're focusing on right now are is taking care of what we already have. There's been millions invested in the zoo by the state and by the community over the last 35 years. And a lot of it was built all at once back in the mid-70s, and it's all kind of coming together in terms of need at the same time as well. We've identified about $43 million worth of asset preservation needs site-wide. That's our buildings, whether it be, you know, skylight replacement and roofs to major exhibit replacements. And so our focus right now and the complete focus of our request is on asset preservation, taking care of existing assets at the zoo. So our request and a bill that will be before you, if it isn't already, will be for $15 million for asset preservation and exhibit renewal. That comes out of a much larger assessment of need. And this chart might be a little hard to read, but you can kind of see we're in a catch-up mode here. We've been rolling forward requests for asset preservation for the last decade. We've had some success in receiving funding, for which we're very grateful. But you can see that there's about a $67 million difference between our requests and what we've actually received over this last decade. And the $15 million we're seeking this year will chip away at that. But there are some really significant overall asset preservation needs at the zoo. We prioritize them. That information is in your package. Again, for us, asset preservation goes beyond maybe the traditional idea of replacing a roof or fixing an HVAC system. A lot of our assets are animal exhibits that often need reimagination. The state of the art changes, requirements change, animal welfare standards increase. And so that's reflected in the priorities that we're showing here. Four major ones, which I'll go through. Discovery Bay, our big aquarium marine mammal facility, we did receive last year $4 million of a $7 million request, and we are in the midst of construction on some of the basic repair work that needed to happen there. Waterproofing of the major pools, concrete and structural damage from salt water is now all underway, and we're confident we're going to be able to address, you know, the most critical needs in there with the $4 million that we received. But there are some unfunded needs as well. In the $7 million request, there's a number of things like major repair and upgrades to the HVAC system, which has been affected by salt water as well. Things that were never put in the first place. If you've been to the Discovery Bay, you know that the seating in the arena is on concrete. Originally, it was intended to be actual seats. So there are some guest amenities and guest facilities that we would like to address as well. But the primary news that we have is, and the question that was on a lot of people's mind is, knowing that the dolphins were leaving the facility and that we were unable to receive any breeding group back in turn, we've looked at what are the alternatives for reusing that space. It is a marine mammal facility. It's designed not, you know, can't put just about anything in it. So we're very excited to be working with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service on a project to bring in a very rare species, the Hawaiian monk seal. There are a number of individual animals that are unreleasable. They have various injuries and other things that make them not suited to be released back to the wild. They need a home. This is a seal that, unlike sea lions that you're all used to seeing in zoos, spends most of its time in the water, which makes it a real great candidate for the new pool, the large pools that we have in Discovery Bay. And so we're now working with the federal government and a number of facilities in Hawaii and elsewhere to become a center for this endangered species, which we can highlight, you know, the issues, you know, why is it endangered in the wild? But it also is a species that utilizes the Discovery Bay space, which, of course, has underwater viewing as well as above water viewing. Only a few species really work in that kind of space. This one is one that we're pretty excited about. So when we're able to complete the repairs to Discovery Bay in about a year, this will be the new species that we'll be focusing on. Now, obviously, the original pools were built for dolphins. Dolphins being strictly aquatic, you don't have to worry about them leaving the pool. Seals are a different deal. And so some of the modifications that we're looking to fund with our request will allow us to make minor modifications. You can see on the right-hand side here, it's essentially extending some of the barrier walls to keep the seals on their side of the glass and the public on theirs. as well as other spaces to be able to isolate animals that aren't getting along and to manage the more amphibious Hawaiian monk seals as opposed to the dolphins that were there. Again, we're hopeful we can do much of this renovation with the existing money that we have, but we know in order to do it well and to do all of the other things that need to happen in the building, the additional $3 million that were in the original request last year is needed. A second major priority is our snow...
Dean has a question.
I'm sorry, just before you move on from the Discovery Bay, the decision to move... To switch from dolphins to seals, was that driven by just kind of changes in what people want to see or availability animals or changes in how you have to treat them, or what was the decision for that?
Madam Chair and Representative Dean, it's a kind of a combination of all of the things you mentioned, but the primary reason is availability. There have been no dolphins brought into accredited zoos and aquariums from the wild for almost 25 years now. So the only dolphins that are in our collections are part of a self-sustaining captive breeding population. We were unable to source a good social group from any of the other facilities that have dolphins. When we closed the building, the two dolphins that were still in our collection, neither of them actually belonged to us. They were here on loan from other facilities. So we did a pretty extensive search, working with our partners and our colleagues around the country, and were unable to find a source of a good social group of dolphins, which is the only way we'd want to display them. They'd need to be in large family groups. And so it really did come down to availability. There are obviously there are animal rights pressures that are being put against many of the facilities that do have dolphins, but that was not the basis of our decision. It was strictly the fact that we did not see a good source of an active social group. So we had to look at alternatives, and the seals, especially the Hawaiian monk seals, we think are going to be both interesting and popular, and it's meeting a need for those individual animals as well as for the species.
Representative Swidzinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question kind of on that process of the when it comes to dolphins. I mean, is there, when you're talking about, do you do trades normally within this world, or do you actually, can you buy them? I mean, what does a dolphin cost?
Madam Chair, Representative Swidzinski. Typically, most animals in accredited zoos, we do not buy or sell. We work cooperatively with other zoos on breeding programs, and we move animals to and from for the betterment of the species. With dolphins, there's a slightly different issue because most of them are actually owned by large for-profit institutions like SeaWorld, who have basically a profit basis for keeping their collection and expanding it in place. That said, the animals that we had exhibited in the past had been primarily brought to the zoo as loans from other facilities that had those animals. There is a small, I guess you could say, market for dolphins among the commercial facilities that display them. And the starting price for a single animal is right now, I think the last time we looked, well over $100,000 per animal. If they're available at all. And again, from our perspective, the only way we would want to display them again is to have an intact social group, not one or two animals, but a larger group. Again, simply not available, period, but even if they were, the cost might be
We do
daunting.
Have to explain our Representative Dean always gives us a little levity here. He expressed with some surprise you could buy a Zamboni for that.
Plunk that. You'd have to freeze the exhibit to make that work.
Follow-up, Representative Swidzinski. Follow-up to the Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just out of curiosity, how many zoos are there in Minnesota?
Mr. Emke.
Madam Chair, Representative Gunther. There are three accredited zoos in Minnesota. There's the Association of Zoos and Aquariums, which is kind of the good housekeeping seal accrediting body for zoos. Represents really the what we would call the professional zoos. And right now, the Lake Superior Zoo, the Como Zoo, and the Minnesota Zoo are all accredited members of that institution. That said, there are dozens of other places that are licensed to exhibit animals to the public. I think nationally there are about 220 accredited zoos out of 2,500 licensed animal exhibition facilities. So less than 10% of facilities that you might call a zoo are actually accredited and are engaged in the kind of conservation education work that we're doing. But that does include our partners in Lake Superior and Como.
Representative
Guthrie. Thank you, Madam Chairman. With all the expertise the state zoo has compared to probably the other zoos, I think of Little Falls as a rather substantial zoo, and I hear it's visited by quite a few people, and they had a problem with their bear exhibit, and they needed some help to get that corrected. Was there any chance that the state zoo could have some help for a community zoo like that?
Madam Chair, Representative Gunther, actually we have assisted Little Falls. They were interested in receiving accreditation. They were looking into the process a few years ago, and we offered to mentor them on that. I don't know. I think in the end they decided they weren't quite ready to take that step, but we're absolutely ready, willing, and able to assist other facilities that are trying to raise their standards and become part of the professional association.
Thank you.
And we visited that zoo, and as I recall, they had at least one bear that they had received. Was it from your institution or somewhere in the state?
Madam Chair, it's quite possible somewhere in the state, because there are orphan bears that the DNR needs to place on a pretty regular basis. It would not have been from our zoo. But
So they don't age out of your institution.
Madam Chair, actually for bears, it's interesting because there are so many orphan bears that need to find homes on an annual basis. That's one animal that we don't attempt to breed in our zoos because, in terms of the American black bears or brown bears, because they can live 30 to 40 years. You can't keep a whole bunch of bears together, so we limit the numbers that we don't breed them as a result.
Representative Earhart?
Thank you, Madam Chair. One zoo I didn't hear you mention was, maybe you weren't considering it, but this place is sometimes referred to as a zoo.
Exactly my thoughts.
When you do this chart here, 71% and 29% of the zoos increase on self-reliance, is most of that turnstile money, or are you eligible now for legacy money and so forth?
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, in the 71%, we're counting earned revenue, which includes the gate, our membership fees, parking, food, gifts, all of those smaller revenue. It does not include the legacy funds. We are eligible and have received legacy funding. That's included in the 29% in that chart. We've received it from the Arts and Cultural Heritage component of the legacy fund, and it's been a very useful and helpful to grow some programs that we always wanted to do that are now able to with the support of the taxpayers.
One more, Madam Chair. You're talking about animals around the world here and the black rhino and so forth. What reference are you making? Are we investing in black rhino conservation in Africa or what?
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, we are, through the Minnesota Zoo Foundation, which is our nonprofit support organization, raises private money to support basic zoo operations, new projects at the zoo, but in addition to support conservation activities beyond Minnesota. And so they have raised funds, and we've also worked in partnership with the International Nature Conservancy to support work by a Minnesota Zoo employee who's actually doing the majority of the work in Africa. We're not using state sources for that. Again, it's that public-private partnership that allows us to do it, but it is definitely part of the mission of our zoo to be engaged in conservation. Focus on minimally part of the mission of our zoo to be engaged in conservation, focused on Minnesota, but also internationally.
Thank you.
Representative Wills.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have to sneak back to Ed Finance, but I wanted to thank you for the opportunity to join in today and hear the presentation. A lot of it I had heard already, but I'm excited about some of the new aspects that are being explored. And I just wanted to encourage the committee members to really consider the zoo as an option for funding. I think the zoo has done, and Lee Emke heading the way, has done an excellent job of being fiscally responsible with the resources that we've provided them. And I would encourage you supporting their efforts. So thank you.
Thanks. Thanks for being with us.
Proud to have them in my district.
We got her from another committee just to have her sit in for a bit. I think you're almost finished here with the presentation. We've got about 10 minutes left.
Okay. Another priority in the current $15 million request is to deal with this facility. We have had snow monkeys at the zoo since we opened in 1978. They're living in a vestige of 1978, surrounded by concrete, lots of disrepair. The holding areas that are off, that are not visible to the public, are literally falling apart. And it doesn't present these animals in the context that we try to present all of our other animals in, which is a natural environment. In addition, all of the public spaces around the snow monkey exhibit are literally cracking and crumbling. Lots of concrete that needs to be replaced, and for public safety reasons, not just aesthetic reasons. And so the combination of the public areas and the animal exhibit are a very high priority for us. This is a vision of what we would like to replace that space with, essentially on the same footprint, creating a beautiful forest, much like the natural Japanese, northern Japanese forest that these animals are from. They're adapted to spending time in water. You may have seen pictures of them in the wild actually finding natural hot springs in the middle of winter and staying warm in that. We'd like to recreate that opportunity for our animals here at the zoo, both for our guests and for the animals. Provide more climbing opportunities and a much more natural setting, again, for the benefit of both the animals and the public. And I think that sums up the role of our zoo. We're focused on the welfare and well-being of our animals, but we also want to create great guest experiences that encourage people to come back more and more. And doing a world-class snow monkey exhibit, which, again, is one of the very first things you see when you come into our zoo, is something we think will add a lot of value to our facility. Beyond that, we have a long list of what I would call, I guess, more nuts and bolts infrastructure, asset preservation needs at the zoo. Lots, you know, we have got 80 buildings on site, many of them in need of new roofs or repairs. A long list you can see here that, again, we will prioritize and reprioritize based on the actual amount that we're able to receive in the future. And as things come up, the ability to take care of high priorities is critical for us. So all that's represented in detail in the materials that you have in your packet. And why do we do all of this? Kind of back to the mission of the zoo, connecting children and nature. That central image there, I mean, we see this more and more, the amount of time that kids are spending focused on a screen as opposed to climbing a tree or catching a frog in a creek. The zoo can kind of be an antidote to that. We can get kids connected to nature again. We know that needs to happen. That's part of our role. We think that also really is, take the next step is that interest in animals that gets sparked early can be a gateway to an interest or a focus on science and math. We all know that the workforce in this state, increasingly, we don't have the skill sets that we need for the jobs of the future. We know that zoos and animals are essentially a gateway to getting kids excited about that, and we're working with the school districts on STEM education initiatives from K through college right now. It's a pretty exciting opportunity for the zoo to be involved in. I think you all know there are fewer and fewer places where you can bring an entire family, and everyone enjoys it and has a great opportunity to be together. We know that the primary reason people come to zoos is not to see animals. The primary reason they come is to be with their family or be with their friends in a setting that that everyone feels is a positive one. We want the opportunity to continue to be a sanctuary for families. The zoo and our success over the last 35 years, I think the original intent of the founders of the zoo was to have a world-class institution. This is a state known for world-class institutions, whether it's the Mayo, the Walker, the Guthrie, and the like. We hope that we're taking our place among those institutions as we move from being the new zoo to the 35-year-old zoo that has a pretty good track record. And finally, I'd like to talk about the economic impact of the zoo. We receive about $5.5 million in state general operating support on an annual basis. Our most recent economic impact study recognizes that we generate, directly and indirectly, about $146 million worth of benefit to the state. through direct employment, but also the spinoff of having the 1.3 million guests coming to the zoo every year. And that number has grown significantly. The last time we did the study, it was $114 million. That was back in 2009. The most recent study that's in your packet calculates at almost $150 million annually. And that does not include the impact of construction. When we have major construction projects, obviously that's creating jobs, that's creating economic stimulus as well.
And I think there's further information about that economic impact in your in the package you presented.
That's correct, Madam Chair. The entire study that was released in December is there. So I'd conclude by saying that I think we've shown to be an excellent steward of resources, whether they are private resources invested in the zoo or the state resources, much of which has come through the Capital Investment Committee. We have classically and traditionally been really shovel ready. We have designs ready to go and projects ready to start as soon as funding is made available. The economic return that you can see is clearly there. But beyond that, there are the maybe less measurable returns on the quality of life for the state of Minnesota and the conservation of nature that we are all about. And again, would like to thank the committee for all the support that we've received over the years, and hope you'll consider our request this year should there be a capital investment bill.
And members, we have people who come before us and present the needs of our institutions, and we sometimes need to call attention to the role they serve in the wider world. Mr. Emke is the U.S. delegate to the World Association of Zoos and Aquariums. He's president-elect of that organization, as I understand, and will become president in October 2013, which certainly is an honor for you and an honor for us as you bring those opportunities to the wider world. And connecting Minnesota to that is something we're grateful for. So congratulations on that additional role. Questions? Any further questions?
Madam Chair.
Representative Dean.
I just want to say thank you for the update, and you guys do a great job of keeping members up to date on what's going on behind the scenes and letting us, if something's in the news, to make sure we get out there. And also, your economic impact, to put the behind the numbers document in the packet is really great. I wish everybody did that. Where do you get those numbers from? And actually to have it in there ahead of time. And then also the low profile black and white. Awesome job with that. That's
Madam Chair, Representative Dean, I'll credit Jenny Nash for the black and white.
We have always made a point of saying in the earlier presentation, they made a point of saying their glossy was not printed at government expense, so we're always conscious of that. Representative Norton.
Well, Madam Chair, just to add a little humor, I just was wondering which of the Republicans here were going to get in that Japanese monk seal costume this year if we bring this forward. And maybe Representative Dean will be the one to do that.
Right there with you.
I do think this is a helpful piece because it does help make the case for those state investments. Anything further? Thank you very much for being here. And do we have any? As far as we know, we're not canceling any meetings next week. No forecasts, no all-night sessions or anything. So we have Parks and Trails and Minnesota Historical Society, and then a Bell Museum, which some people pointed out, not everyone understood that the Bell Museum was actually the state's natural history museum. They emphasized we ought to make clear that it's not a museum for bells. So we'll find out a little bit about it at our Thursday, March 14th meeting. Meeting is adjourned.